You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Glory be to the earth and the wind. Glory be to the sun and the rain. Glory be to animals and children and women and men. Glory be to our holy flame, which calls us together as one. Those words are from Betty A. Doughty, and they're from the little Welcome Unitarian Universalist Primer. These are available in the foyer, and they make quite interesting reading. I'd like to welcome you here today. We are an inclusive community, and we can take that for granted. Last night I went to Eucharia and saw Joseph Tawadros play, and he plays the oud, and he came to Australia aged 3, he's Egyptian, but he made lots and lots and lots of jokes about being brown. A bit of a stand-up comedian, as well as a wonderful oud player. One of the people that I was with said, he's not very brown, isn't he? What are you on about? And I thought, yeah, that's our point of view, but the other point of view is that somebody who is even the palest shade of milk coffee cops it constantly at school and all over the place. Some of you may know John Girardini, who's a psychologist, and he is very much an Australian, having been born here. But at the time of the terrorist attacks, every time he went on an aircraft, he was delayed, sometimes half an hour and so on. And so his wife got a t-shirt made for him that said, of Middle Eastern appearance. He wore it at family barbecues. What followed was the Hanif episode. You remember when Dr. Hanif was falsely imprisoned in Brisbane on terrorist charges? So his wife got him another t-shirt that said, Doctor of Middle Eastern appearance. But it was just by joking that people get through, and I think if we think, oh yes, we're inclusive, we accept transgender, we accept brown, we accept this, we accept that, maybe there are limits or a limited understanding of what acceptance really is. Anyway, my next service will be on identity, so I'll leave that to Ben. Hoos Kuya is one of Holland's most celebrated children's book authors. The Book of Everything won the Flemish Golden Owl Award, the Dutch Golden Pencil Award, and was nominated for the 2006 Astrid Lindgren Memorial Award. What makes this surprising is the confronting content, domestic violence. The book is set just after World War II, and the ostensible author is 9-year-old Thomas Klopper, who does his best to understand his dysfunctional family and the neighbourhood. He writes about his life in his book, The Book of Everything, and here's the excerpt from him. Someday is the only day you have to push like a handcart, Thomas wrote in The Book of Everything. The other days roll down the bridge by themselves. On Sundays they went to church, not to an ordinary church in the neighbourhood, but to a special church a long way from home. It was a church in an ordinary house, without a steeple. During the service you could hear people upstairs doing the vacuum cleaning. Hardly anybody went to that church, but his family did. Father, Mother, Margot and Thomas. Mother wore a hat and Margot had a scarf over her hair, because they had to, in church. You weren't allowed to see the women's hairdo. For men, it didn't matter, because they don't have a hairdo. They walked, because God did not want the trams to run on Sunday. The trams ran anyway, and that wasn't very nice for God to have to put up with. There were two most shameful things One was having been on the wrong side during the war, and the other was riding in a tram on Sunday. The service took a long time. The children of Israel dragged themselves murmuring through the wilderness, and the pews were hard. The good bit was singing back and forth that went like this. There was a bald gentleman in a long black dress with lots of small buttons, and he sang a line by himself. Then the people had to sing a line all back together, again and again, turn and turn about. The black dress sang something different every time, but the people always responded with the same line. Musical Lord, forgive our miserable singing. Thomas joined in at the top of his voice. He tried to count the buttons on the black dress at the same time, but he kept losing count. On the way home, Father seemed to be cross about something. He said nothing, looked straight ahead, and at the table after the prayer, he said, Thomas, stand up. What followed was a merciless thrashing. He had to repeat the correct lyrics 100 times, not Musical Lord, forgive our miserable singing, but Merciful Lord, forgive us miserable sinners. Not surprisingly, when Thomas is asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? Thomas says, happy. I want to be happy. Give a proper answer, Thomas, says his father. Now you'll need to stay for the address to hear how the Book of Everything answers that one. If I forget, remind me to let you know. Happy and you know it, celebrate International Day of Happiness on March the 20th. Well, that popped up on my computer screen, so I looked up on my Google Calendar. I hadn't heard of it, but there seems to be a special day for almost everything these days. April 27, Denim Day. May the 1st, World Laughter Day. May the 5th, World Password Day. May the 7th, World Naked Gardening Day. Just know. Think of the roses. Besides, I want to be happy, but I can't be happy till I make you happy too. Life's really worth living when you are not giving. Why can't I give some to you? Ba-da-ba-bum. No. It's a very dated musical, but the costumes are lovely, set in the 20s. Romantic comedy, though, was not what the United Nations had in mind when they conceptualised happiness in 2012, devising a method of measuring it. Gross national happiness was first reported on in Bhutan, using per capita income, GDP, health, social cooperation, mutual trust, freedom to make life-related decisions and generosity. And although it was sometimes touted as the world's happiest country, especially in tourism advertisements, Bhutan has been exposed as the site of ethnic cleansing. The military booted out the Nepalis in 1996. Its chief claim to fame is its carbon-negative status, which is due to the unspoiled forests, pristine environment, the product actually of years of isolation from the rest of the world. It's in the Himalayas. In 2013, the first International Day of Happiness was celebrated and launched by Thabo Mandela and Chelsea Clinton at the TEDx Teen Conference in New York City. In 2014, Pharrell Williams released the 24-hour musical video for his song Happy, and in 2017, the Smurfs joined in. They help promote 17 sustainable development goals for 2017. Have they actually celebrated International Happiness Day? Well, frankly, it sounds a bit infantile with smirks and teens and hello birds, hello skies, gibby poo under the rainbow. It's over the rainbow, isn't it? Never mind. There is a serious side. The right to pursue happiness was enshrined in the US Constitution at the outset, but the UN did not identify it as a fundamental goal until 2012, when it promoted a more holistic approach to public policy and economic growth, one that recognises that happiness and well-being are important pieces of sustainable and more equitable development. The official page for the International Day of Happiness goes one step further, declaring happiness a universal human right. But is it? Is it a right or a goal? Aldous Huxley thought not. He saw happiness as a byproduct of other activities, not as a worthwhile goal in itself. I've got Aldous there, no I haven't. Aldous didn't make it. Never mind. His novel, Brave New World, presents the society in which everyone is happy as a colossal fraud engineered by the government by means of the drug called Soma. If you consider World Health Organization, you'll see a similar anomaly. Health is defined as a right, but the details make it clear that health, per se, isn't the right, but rather the means to achieve the best health possible is the aim. Bearing in mind the state of the world at present, the challenges we face, it's not surprising that emotions like anger and sadness are increasingly becoming a default way to be. And at this point, I might return to the little story that I introduced. Thomas Cropper, the one who was getting beaten by his dad, and dad was getting stuck in the mum as well. He was very, very angry about that, and in fact, reenacted the plagues of Egypt on his father. Pouring red cordial into the fish tank didn't work. His methods didn't work. His sister ended up threatening father with a knife. His mother hit back. Nothing worked. Absolutely nothing worked until the old lady downstairs, who'd been a resistance worker during the war, arranged for Thomas to start a reading club in their house. It was just filled with members of people, and when Thomas was asked, give a proper answer. When Thomas was told, give a proper answer, everybody just stared at the father as if he'd just farted. And then just proceeded with the reading club, and dad was basically sidelined. So what solved the problem of domestic violence was community collusion, which I think is a pretty good message for everyone really. Now, I came across an interview on the Barclay Greater Good Science Centre of a Costa Rican girl who visited her home country in her early 20s and was intrigued to discover that Costa Rica is the happiest country in South America. Things started to fall into place when she went to an afternoon coffee at her parents' place at 3 in the afternoon. That was just the custom. Every day, coffee, 3 p.m. Other visitors arrived, and her parents served very fresh bread, still warm from a baker's oven, with butter or sour cream. People raved about the beautiful bread and the lovely butter and the lush sour cream, and it occurred to Julie Santos that any one of them could have afforded bread or butter or cream. What was the big deal? After the guests had left, Julie asked her mum what was so cool about the bread. The reply was that the visitors were only expecting coffee, not the bread and butter. The joy came from getting more than what they expected. The words repeated throughout this explanation were Buena Vida, pure life, enough is enough, just living is a gift. Julie reflected that the outpouring of praise and gratitude related to the fresh bread would never have happened in America. People have higher expectations. They live in bigger houses. They expect prompt attention. You can always spot Americans in Costa Rica because they're the ones in the queue who are not chill. They become agitated if they have to wait long because they have an expectation that a certain thing, like buying a ticket, should take this amount of time. They don't say "Buona vita" and settle in for chat while they wait. Every little thing that is above or beyond the expected is celebrated by Costa Ricans. Buona vida, pure love. Enough is enough. Just living is good. Buona vida can mean thank you, hello, goodbye, whatever. Julie reflects that what the Costa Ricans have is the basics. Democracy, universal health care, and a well-developed middle class. Smaller homes, admittedly, but quantity isn't the basic. The important thing is to be enough in the eyes of your own community. Now, she feels too American to be a good Costa Rican and too Costa Rican to be a good American. It's the dilemma, isn't it, in a lot of immigrant children. She says, "I don't want to reduce a three-hour conversation to five bullet points you can bunt on," and is sure she's been passed over in the States at work because of her Costa Rican trays. And she's grateful for her Costa Rican side because it helps her enjoy her son, who has some disabilities. "I don't care if he doesn't do very well at school. He doesn't need to go to a prestigious college. Just as long as he can operate, be accepted by his peers, find a significant other in his life, maybe a job." She's also adamant that you must be able to fail. You don't always need to meet the expectations of others. On the other hand, showing up for each other, it's another matter. That's always important. In the USA, happiness may be less common, but studies and courses abound. The Berkeley Greater Good Science Center ran a study on expectation and gave all the participants $10 and a chance to make more money by making decisions. Some safe, some risky. They lay on an MRI machine with a touchpad to press buttons, and they were quizzed every moment about how they felt. And the thing was, generally, the people who made the most money were not the happiest. It was those who exceeded their own expectations. Now, happiness was measured by activity in the striatum, which is the part of the brain that produces dopamine, and the self-reporting functioned as a double check. So, is the key to happiness low expectations? Well, you can't really lead your life that way, and it isn't. Consistently low expectations can be very depressing indeed. The Berkeley Greater Good Science Center is not just good for quirky science that confirms the fairly obvious. It produces groundbreaking research into the roots of compassion, happiness and altruism. The center studies the neuroscience, the psychology, the sociology of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient way to be. It produces podcasts and courses suitable for healthcare professionals, teachers, parents, children, students, and their mission is to produce a kinder society. Now, the podcasts cover topics like what does it take to lead a happier life? And you get that sort of thing might come up, but there was one that particularly recommended itself to me, and it was how to turn grief into strength. That particular one recommended an expressive writing practice in which you just write, free from the strictures of spelling and grammar, free from the expectation that you're tuned to the positives. You're not exhorted to always look on the bright side, but instead release control and say what you need to say, the truth. The Berkeley Center departs from Huxley's position that you don't set happiness as your goal, but regard it as a byproduct of other activities. On the other hand, it's not diametrically opposed to that either. It involves other activities. Now, the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu were great advocates for the importance of joy and happiness. Indeed, Christine Mason lent me a book, The Book of Joy, and it was about the meeting on a birthday. It had been cancelled and cancelled and cancelled, and eventually they shared a short amount of time at Dharamsala, and it's an absolutely wonderful read. If we return to where I began today, the United Nations International Day of Happiness The opening statement reads, with our world facing unprecedented challenges, well-being matters more than ever. When we choose to take an action to help others, they benefit, we benefit, and we set an example of kindness that can ripple out into the world too. So the ways to help is the heading on the website page. It lists three. Imagine peace, connect with people, and give directly. There are links for supporting people in Ukraine, Yemen, Gaza, Afghanistan, but those tips work in the microcosm too. Imagine, connect, give. Imagine peace, connect with other people, and give directly. The theme for Happiness Day 2022, keep calm, stay wise, be kind. Keeping calm in every possible situation is the key to happiness and satisfaction. Staying wise in tough situations leads to success and resolutions. Being kind to others and their needs, and their mistakes and errors will help them grow and also make them feel better. Putting an end to poverty, reducing inequality and protecting our planet are all related to well-being and happiness. If you see happiness as the outcome of wisdom, kindness and equanimity, you can directly pursue happiness as your goal. If you see happiness as getting what you want or being the best in the world, something you're probably doomed to a pratfall of some description. Being modest in your expectations, being kind and calm does not preclude high achievement or even being a mover and shaker. If we look at examples like the late Dalai Lama and the late Desmond Tutu, you see that combination of love and action. And I'm sure that you are aware of the immense kindness that pours out of artists like Yo-Yo Ma. That's a shot of Natalie Stutzman who played the Ukraine anthem and dedicated Mozart's Rec to peace in Ukraine. And she was very, very careful in the little speech that she gave to dedicate it to all those who died in Ukraine, not just the Ukrainians. Billy Connolly, you just look at him and smile, don't you? He's just wonderful. And Jimmy Barnes, bless his heart, has a t-shirt. Kind is cool, so be as kind as you can. If you look at the faces of these people, what do you see? It's happiness. I would like to conclude today's prayer with a meditation. And what I'd like you to do without pen and paper is think of five things that make you happy. You've got five fingers. It's for keeping count. When you have those in your mind's eye, focus on one and think, is this something I can practice every day? If even one of the five things you think of, you're on the way to practicing happiness. Do any of the five relate to reaching out and connecting with others? Do any involve imagining a better world? So let's begin. Stand up if you like. You've been sitting for a long time. Have a stretch. Ooh. And you can sit down again when you're ready. That's good stretching. And begin by taking three mindful deep breaths, noticing your abdomen rise before your chest. Hold for a second or two and release slowly before taking the next breath. I won't call that process, we all have different lung capacities, so in your own time. It's a deep, relaxed in-breath, a brief hold, slow exhalation, pause and repeat two times. Now think of what makes you happy, what brings happiness to you. We'll be silent for a couple of minutes. are any of your happiness triggers things that you can practice every day? Are you imagining a better world? Are you reaching out to connect with others? Can you discern a feeling of contentment as you contemplate happiness? Now we'll have the benediction, and you may like to stand for that. It's not compulsory, but it's sort of traditional. Stand if you're able or comfortable. We leave this gathered community, but we don't leave our connection, our concerns, our care for each other, our service to each other, to the world, and to our faith continues. Until we're together again, be strong, be well, be true, and be loving.
We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.